You've already heard the worldview of ABC News, the ACLU, and the National Education Association. Now, tune in for the other worldview. This is Generations with Kevin Swanson.
This is Generations, my friends. Welcome. My name is Kevin Swanson. I'm Executive Director for Christian Home Educators of Colorado. I'm a pastor, but the reason I'm here, I'm a father of five. We're homeschooling our children out on the plains of Colorado. My children are ages 5 through 14, and my son Daniel is taking Algebra 2. We have been teaching math from the beginning in our home school, and I've got some stuff about math in the news. I've got some stuff about math in the news. This comes from Montana. In Montana, half of the graduating seniors took the ACT this year. The results indicate that about half the students who took the test may not be ready for college freshman level math coursework, and more than half may not be ready for college freshman level science coursework. Here in Colorado, we find that Colorado is trailing their peers across the nation in math and science, at least according to the ACT college entrance exams. 19% of Colorado students met benchmark scores in all sections of the ACT, English, math, science, and reading, compared to 21% of students nationally. A benchmark score is the minimum score needed to indicate a 50% chance of earning a B grade or higher, or 75% chance of earning a C or higher in corresponding college courses. So only 19% of Colorado students met the benchmark scores in the ACT. China will graduate four times the number of engineers as the United States this year, while Japan, a country with half our population, will graduate double the number of engineers. So these guys are definitely training way more engineers, guys who are able to use math and science. Japan, four times the number of engineers than the United States. And Dave, part of the reason for this is that America is way behind in math and science. Reasons for this? What are your thoughts?
Well, I think one of the thoughts is that we don't pay engineers, we don't compensate them the same way we do, say, people in marketing.
Yeah.
It doesn't take a genius to figure out that you can take an easier course through college, have a more fun career because it's not as hard, and you can get paid more.
Yeah. Well, we're obviously not teaching our students math and science. Dave, I think one of the reasons is because math and science requires a great amount of character. I've always said character is preeminent in education, and there is probably no better way of teaching character than to set a student down and have him work through 30 math problems. You ever tried something like that before, Dave? That takes, what we used to call discipline.
And to make it even worse, have them be 30 math proofs.
Oh, yeah. Or story problems. Folks, in just a minute, we want to talk about teaching math and science. We're doing it. Dave Buhner, Kevin Swanson, doing it in their home schools. We're going to talk about how to do it and why it's important next on Generations. My name is Kevin Swanson.
Deeply embedded on the front lines of the War of the Worldviews, here's your host, Kevin Swanson.
Ladies and gentlemen, back on Generations, my name is Kevin Swanson, and you know, one of the things that I was doing for years and years, I tutored math. Once I was in college, I tutored math. I also taught math in public and private high schools, so I love math, the subject of math, but one of the problems we have seen in the teaching of math, and I think this is one of the reasons why American students are not prepared to be good engineers and are effectively innumerate. You've heard of illiterate. Well, we've got a new word now. Dave just taught it to me off air here. It is innumerate. There are lots and lots of students that are innumerate, and I think one of the reasons is because math has become increasingly abstract. I have right here in front of me a math textbook for high schools written in 1877. You can tell, Dave, because the book has...
Oh, it's in two volumes.
Fallen apart. Yeah, it's fallen apart. But this book was written in 1877. One of the things you notice about this book, though, is that much of the book is very, very, very practical. Just about every other problem, in fact, I'd say 70% of the problems are practical applications. A thief is 240 steps before an officer. It takes 5 steps to the officer's 4, et cetera, et cetera. Here's some stuff on insurance. A merchant insured his store for 3/4 of the value at 1.25%, but soon after the store was burned down, his loss over the insurance was 41%. $2,150, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I borrowed of Mr. W $400 for 3 months, $600 for 5 months, $800 for 6 months. At the end of 4 months, I paid him a $1,200. At what time in equity should the remainder be paid? The book is just one fat book full of application. This is the way they taught math. Dave, math has become increasingly abstract.
Well, math by its very nature is abstract. If I were to tell you to go get me a five, a nice warm fuzzy five, what would you get? You might get me the symbol five, but that's not five. You may get me five of something, but that's not five. Five is an abstraction. It's a concept. It only exists in our minds. So by its very nature, math is abstract. But in order to make math relevant, we need to take the abstraction and apply it concretely to the areas of life.
Absolutely. Two major questions you have to ask. As you teach factoring, you need to ask two questions. Now, factoring is taking the x squared plus 4x plus 4 and putting it into an x plus 4, x plus 2, x plus 2, sort of a trinomial factoring. But if you are doing that and you're setting down your son to do that, then you need to ask two questions. Why are we learning to factor, and when do we use factoring? Math can be very irrelevant, my friends, if your student cannot answer those two questions. If you're teaching it, he needs to know why and when, period. Now, in the postmodern world, thinking has become increasingly fragmented. We do a lot of neat things, but we have no idea why we're doing them. At the end, we forget why we're doing them because philosophers, for the most part, have given up on the question why. But as we do it from a Christian perspective, we know why. We know why. It has much to do with taking dominion. It has much to do with seeking God's kingdom and his righteousness. It has to do with God's glory. It has to do with a function for man and why we're here on earth. This is key for us. Now, there have been some good Christian curricula in the area of math. David Quine's Making Math Meaningful is one of the good curricula that's out there. The other one is Matthew C. We had the Matthew C. guy on here on the air several months ago. What was his name? Stephen Demme. Stephen Demme has come up with Matthew C. Extremely hands-on, extremely applicable. See, real-life application is critical, my friends. And let me give you an example of this. One time, my wife is out in the kitchen, and she is grinding up coriander seed. You know, the coriander seed with the mortar and pestle, and it's just sort of flying everywhere. My little 7-year-old Bethany is standing there watching Mom as she's mortar and pestling this coriander seed. She looks up at Mom, and she says, "Mom, why don't you put that into the pepper grinder?" My wife was shocked. She said, "Wow, genius! We've got a genius! We've got a genius!" Well, this is a very simple thing for Bethany. Bethany had seen that the coriander seed was basically the same size and consistency as a peppercorn. And so she knew that pepper grinders grind peppercorn, so why can't pepper grinders grind coriander seed? It was a very simple 1 plus 1 equals 2. It's a very simple logical progression in her mind. But the point is that she is being educated with this concept of life integration. You learn something, you learn to apply it. If you are just learning a bunch of facts, a bunch of knowledge, but you do not have the facility by which you can apply those things in the everyday life, my friends, your education is sadly impoverished.
And Kevin, when we talk about math, we got to talk about it in correspondence with other subjects. Some children are taught Latin. They ask, "Why must I learn this Latin? This is so boring." If you don't have an application, if you can't answer the why, maybe you shouldn't be doing it. You should have the answers why you're teaching math. And some of those answers are really important. We model physical phenomenon, that's creation. We model it with mathematical equations, and then we can understand it and we can predict it, which becomes extraordinarily useful in inventions and technology, and being able to make predictions that might be very important in our lives, like how much money is going to be in the bank account.
Dave, I think it's important for us to sit our students down on day one, okay? Day one of our algebra class, day one of that early arithmetic class, whatever, we need to set our kids down and say, okay, this is why you are studying math, because you need to learn how to add, subtract, divide, do fractions. If you're going to buy things at the grocery store and you want to buy it on sale, you need to find out how much you're getting something per ounce. So fractions is absolutely essential. You need to know how to do math if you're going to function in life. Dave, how many times have you been out building houses and you're adding one dimension to another dimension and three guys are standing around you and they're not able to do it? I mean, it happens way too much. People are trying to build houses. They do not know how to do math. It is not, you know, a sixth sense to them. It is not something that comes naturally.
Yeah, especially if they're using fractions instead of decimals, or they're mixing and matching kinds of systems. Yeah. And, you know, when we talk about the applications of math, the computer is basically nothing but calculations of math principles and then spitting them out according to some phenomenon. But it's not doing nothing but calculating math. If you look at music, music follows mathematical equations. In fact, our octave is based on a very specific math formula of having the lengths of strings. If you look at art, visual art appeals to the human when it is in particular mathematical proportions and isosceles triangles kinds of things that appeal visually, and I think that's because we're created in the image of God and we still have some remnant of that, that math is very important. If we don't have math, we will miss out on some of the glory and some of the appreciation of God's kingdom as well as the predictive abilities.
If you can't do math, ladies and gentlemen, your children aren't going to be able to do art. They won't be able to do adding and subtraction, buying things, building things, doing things, living, surviving, taking dominion of God's green earth. Well, the reasons to do math, we need it in life. We need it for thinking skills. We learn how to think by doing math. Now, obviously, math isn't the only way to train us how to think. You can take logic classes, too. I recommend logic classes. My children take them. But math teaches a certain form of logic. Geometry certainly is very good in that. Also, it teaches a detail orientation. This is especially true in higher math. Math is very exacting. Now, granted, there are lots of ways to teach detail orientation. Just send your kid out into the basement to paint some of your trim. Maybe that's one way you can teach detail orientation. But certainly, math is one way to do it. As well. These are the reasons to teach math, but let's move on to how to teach it. Let me encourage you to teach it in the concrete. Teach it in the concrete and also apply it in the concrete. And let me give you two examples for this. Let's say you're teaching the Pythagorean theorem, a squared plus b squared equals c squared. I would encourage you to do it by means of blocks. Now, Matthew C. does this, and it's excellent. It uses the blocks. What you do is you set up the right triangle. Take the classic 3-4-5 triangle. The two legs are 3 and 4. The hypotenuse is 5. Arrange 9 blocks, a 3x3, on the 3 leg. Then arrange a 4x4 blocks on the 4 leg. Now you've got 16 blocks on the 4 leg, and you've got 9 blocks on the 3 leg. Now, arrange the 5x5 blocks on the hypotenuse. That's the leg that is the longest leg, the 5-inch leg, so to speak. You've got a 5x5 blocks on that leg. So you've basically got a 5x5, a 4x4, and a 3x3. Now, tell your students to add up the 3x3 and the 4x4 and ask them what it comes out to. Well, it's 16 plus 9, which is 25. Boom, you've got 25, and the hypotenuse is a 5x5, which is a total of 25 blocks. There it is. You add up the two sides squared, and you wind up with the 25, the squared on the hypotenuse. That is a very nice, visual, concrete way to explain the Pythagorean theorem.
You could also lay out concrete and have square corners by measuring a 3, a 4, and a 5 in between to make sure that you have a right triangle, which is used all the time and is eminently practical.
Yeah. And now, I said you want to teach it in the concrete. That's how you teach the concept in the concrete. But apply it in the concrete, too. And here's the way you do it. Let's say you're building a garage, a 10x10 garage or a 10x10 shed. What should the hypotenuse be of a 10x10 garage? And why do you care? Well, you care because you obviously want right angles, right, on every angle. And this theorem, a squared plus b squared equals c squared, gives you that right triangle. Now, if you've got a 10x10 garage, then you take the 10 squared plus 10 squared, you're going to square root the 200, you're going to wind up with a 14.1 foot hypotenuse. All right? Now, you want to make sure you maintain the perpendicular lines. The diagonal has got to be 14.1. So lay out your 10 feet and your 10 feet, and then move your two ends of your 10-foot lines until the distance approaches the 14.1 feet. And so what you've got then is a 10-foot side, and a 14.1 hypotenuse between the two corners. That, my friends, guarantees a right angle. You will have perpendicular walls. Now you've applied it, you see, in the concrete. So, folks, it's incredibly important to teach math and science in the concrete. Let's just give a few examples of how you teach science in the concrete. Dave, obviously, labs are very important, but it's got to be more than labs. You see an old well, okay? You ever come across an old well with your kids? What do you do? What do you do with an old well? You know, you got water down there some 16, 17 feet down. What do you do? I mean, you never go past a well without testing the D equals A, 1/2 AT squared. You just don't. You gotta teach, you gotta prove Newton out one more time, right? The distance that rock is gonna fall is gonna be 1/2 AT squared. It's gonna be 1/2 32 feet per second, right? Times the time squared. So, okay, you time it. You go, okay, that was 2.3 seconds. Kids, let's just double check, make sure the distance was 17 feet. You always do it every time, don't you, Dave?
Well, we use the 9.8 meters per second squared, but that's just because we were taught here in America.
Ah, yeah, right. Or what about yogurt containers? Why do they bulge in Denver? Or the Frito bag, you know, the big fat Frito bags. I mean, why? Why are they, you know, you take it to 5,280 feet, which is where we are. Why do the Frito bags bulge in Denver? I mean, every time you buy a Frito bag, Dave, do you bring it out? Do you say, hey, kids, look at the big fat Frito bag?
And it bulges more the higher you go. But, Kevin, I've noticed this. People who are walking around eating out of that Frito bag, they tend to bulge also.
Yeah, that's true as well. You know, here's one other thing we always talk about is when you are driving, you know that the kinetic energy that you are running through is 1/2 mv squared, right? It's the mass times the velocity squared. And, you know, I tell my children this all the time. The faster you're going in an accident, the more heat is going to be dissipated in that accident. It's going to mess up everybody in the car and outside of the car. So if that velocity is tapered somewhat, if you can taper that velocity 1 mile per hour, 5 mile per hour, 10 mile per hour before you get in that accident, you're going to save a lot of V squared. You know, this is real stuff. This is where kinetic energy turns into heat, and it happens in accidents. But see, Dave, what we're doing here is we are applying real science to real life. We are living science. And Dave, if you're not living science, to me, it is irrelevant, and your children are going to forget it. It's going to be a total waste of time to give them physics or chemistry in high school. I'd say just don't even bother. If they don't know how to apply it, it's going to be a total waste of time.
And really, science is just the application of the principles that God's placed in creation. It should be fun. It should be interesting to see how God has designed the universe.
Well, before we wrap up this highly relevant program on math and science today, folks, we're going to ask the question, how much math and science do we give our children? And, you know, Dave, every one of my children are different. Rebecca, Joy, Emily, they're not the math whizzes that my son Daniel is. And yet, my son Daniel, he does math very well, but my doubts are that he's going to actually apply math all that much. He's probably not going to be a scientist, a researcher, or an engineer. He will probably be working in sales or something of that sort. So we have to take into consideration the principle of individuality. I think this is absolutely essential. Of course, I want my children to do the basics well. We've already talked about that. They need basic arithmetic. They need to know it. They need to be able to apply it just like that. It needs to be second nature to them. They need to know a few geometric principles, certainly the area of circles, triangles, etc. They should know some basic statistics, Dave. I think they need means, averages, ranges, standard deviations. They need to know this sort of thing. Why? Because this comes up in scientific studies, and if they're going to look at scientific studies or, you know, respond to some kind of scientific study being done, they certainly ought to know some basic statistics.
Yeah, and so they also should learn the discipline of math, because math teaches how to think in very logical progression and is very useful, even if we don't use the math application in our careers, that we'd be able to think in those very logical, syllogistic manners.
And that's one of the reasons why I recommend geometry. I think for most children, again, not 100%, and maybe 95, 98% of children, I personally would recommend taking geometry in the high school years. Nevertheless, I don't think algebra is all that important. I think some basic algebra is important. Now, through most of my engineering career, I never factored a trinomial, not even once. I didn't do much calculus. I don't know if I did any calculus, because most of the time now, CAD does most of your calculus, your integration, your differentials for you. So for the most part, I did not use calculus, even as an engineer. As an engineer, I used MX plus B equals the line and so forth. I certainly understood that and applied that perhaps on a monthly basis or a biannual basis or something of that sort. But the average person does not use an MX plus B line formula in his daily
daily life, or, you know, as he sells used cars or sells real estate or that sort of thing. So I don't believe that algebra is necessary for a lot of folks. Nevertheless, if they're going into engineering, if they're going into science, if they're going into research, they certainly ought to know algebra. They ought to know trigonometry. They ought to know the sine, the cosine, the tangents. They ought to know some applied statistics. They ought to get past some of the basic standard deviations. They need to do some basic ANOVAs, analysis of variance. They need to know differences in gauge accuracy and precision. They need to know that if they're going to do any scientific studies whatsoever. Dave, you know, a lot of these subjects are, these statistical studies are barely covered in engineering coursework, and I can't believe it, because once you get out and you start actually doing studies, trying to optimize processes and designs, you're going to wind up with a lot of statistics. Not as much calculus, but a lot of statistics.
The approximations and the iterative calculations of the programs that you're using, like the CAD program, is based on real calculus. So if you're the person who's doing, say, computer programming, you may be using some of that higher math. You may be using differential equations. You'll certainly be using your linear algebra. So if you're going to be in programming, or that's the area of dominion, you're going to have to add more math.
But the way
that we think is important. I would also add to that list, that laundry list of things to teach, is approximation. Yeah. How to approximate numbers. I would think that children would do very well to learn their exponents and understand how orders of magnitude really affect things. And that way, when somebody says that we're $1 trillion in debt, they understand that that number is a big number.
Again, folks, if your student is going to be in scientific research, if he's going into engineering, we recommend the trigonometry, the algebra, even the calculus. You can move him ahead into college credits early on when he's 15 or 16 years old. Have him do some calculus early on. I think that should belong in the average high school curricula, especially if your young person is going into the field of applied science and engineering. Folks, you have been listening to A Basic Introduction to Teaching Math and Science. Hopefully this has been helpful to you, especially if you have young children that are getting an education. And folks, do not trust the schools to do it for you. Please do not trust the schools to give your children a good education. As parents, you are responsible before God to give your children a good education. That's why I wrote the book, Upgrade the 10 Secrets to the Best Education for Your Child. I wrote the book for parents because I believe that tens of millions of parents need to buy books on education. They are responsible before God to give their children a good education. I'm not telling them what kind of education to give them. The book does not necessarily say you've got to be homeschooling. It recommends homeschooling. It considers homeschooling a good approach. But the point is this. Parents are responsible for the education of their children. So let me encourage you to get my book, and you will find out what a good education looks like. Go on our website, kevinswanson.com, and just click on store. You can interact with this program by emailing me at host@kevinswanson.com, and you can hear the program anytime, anywhere in the world, at kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson, and I want to invite you back again next time as we lay down a vision for the next generation.